What's going on, folks? Welcome back to the Go With The Flow NHL podcast brought to you by The Sports On Tap. These are the Sports On Tap Chicago hockey guys. I'm Nick Phillips, joined by my line mate, as always, up in the great white north of Minnesota, Daniel Maritz. Fella, how you doing?
Doing well, buddy. It's getting warmer. And by warmer, I mean it's like 10 degrees outside.
Fuck, man. It's been brutal.
It's been a wild couple weeks.
I don't know if you got the front that came in, but we got absolutely shit pounded by snow in Chicago. I mean,
no, yeah, we escaped that part. The snow did not hit us, but it was just, you know, sub-zero temperatures. I was actually talking to a coworker of mine today, and he said in Minnesota, it's the longest since like the 1800s that it's been sub-zero. And it was like X amount of hours. It ended up being like four and something, you know, 4.5 days or something like that. Anyway, yeah, it's been cold, dude. Cars have been dead everywhere, you know, all that
stuff.
Cars
here were covered. The amount of friends and, you know, social media acquaintances and shit that like, just on, you know, they're street parking in the city here.
Or oh, I bet.
Back home shoveling and like their cars are completely covered. So yeah, we got absolutely pounded with
dude,
snow here.
It's so bad everywhere.
But yeah, good to be back. We actually had a couple trades, and shockingly, or not so shockingly, Alex Galchenyuk involved in two. So this man has now been dealt seven times, I believe, in 7 years. And we're talking about a kid who, not a kid, I mean, he's basically a vet now in the NHL. I guess he's been around long enough where we've got to stop calling him a kid. But, man, he just can't find a home anywhere.
Yeah.
He's got all the skill in the world, obviously, being highly touted and getting drafted that high and, you know, being with Montreal for a bit. But, man, he's bounced around. It's hard to really even keep track. I mean, I know he's with Arizona and Pittsburgh and Minnesota for a bit.
Well, he got picked up by Ottawa in the offseason, if I'm not mistaken, and they already let him go. And we're, you know, how many games into the season?
It gets better. So, yeah, they get him. You know, Ottawa picks him up, right? So then they trade Cedric Paquette, who they had gotten, you know, Tampa Bay had cap dumped Paquette, you know, to become cap compliant. They dump Paquette, you know, and I believe it was Braden Coburn to Ottawa. And now Ottawa's trading Paquette and Galchenyuk to Carolina for Ryan DeZingel. DeZingel goes back to Ottawa where he started his career. He's actually a Chicago kid. I believe he's from Wheaton. Nice to have a Chicago guy in the NHL. But DeZingel's back in Ottawa. He makes, I believe, $3.75 million a year. He's an expiring contract. Paquette makes $1.6 million. He's expiring. The Hurricanes, immediately upon acquiring Galchenyuk, trade him to Toronto. So you got to think, like, this is it. Like, if you can't flourish offensively with all that talent, all those vets, you got Thornton dishing the puck around, you got Marner, you got Matthews, and Matthews is absolutely world-class. He's killing it this year. Nylander, they got some skill guys on the blue line. You know, they're obviously, you know, a top-flight team. They're a serious cup contender. You got to think for Galchenyuk, it's now or never. It's either time to figure it out, or I hate to say it, like, he might need to just go overseas to the KHL.
Yeah, I really think that's the next step for him. Not to cut you off, but I mean, we're definitely on the same page. I think he's done for a while, unfortunately. Like you said, bouncing around and, you know, we're 18 games. Ottawa's played 18 games. They've already let go of him. Obviously, something was not gelling. And that's a team that's struggling as it is. I mean, they're 4-13 right now and they let go of him. So, you know, I would say he might be done for the rest of his career.
I was going to say
his age is potentially his saving grace. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not that old yet. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's nothing the AHL is going to fix. That would have happened, you know, 3-4 years ago, whatever it was. This is definitely something where if he wants to get back in the NHL, he's going to have to go overseas, like you mentioned earlier, find that scoring touch again, somehow, whatever league it's in, and then eventually make his way back. And even then, it's not going to be very easy because, like you said,
he's here now. I mean, he's on Toronto. I don't know what they're going to do with him, but I think the point is if he doesn't figure it out fast in Toronto,
That's what I mean. Yeah.
He's got to, I mean, it's now or never time, or else he's going to have to go. I would 100% agree. I feel like there's any team out there. I mean, there's a few teams, I guess I could name, but Toronto's one of a few teams on a very, very short list that could maybe, or maybe he could find a niche there or something, but
right.
Crazy. But yeah, Galchenyuk, I mean, he's just getting passed around like, you know, fucking Thanksgiving stuffing. I mean, just every team in the league's getting a, you know, a play to him. It's ridiculous how exactly. much guys have been moving around. It's like, I feel like the only reason he's getting acquired is because teams think they can fix him or he's got potential. But it seems like last couple of years, a lot of teams have gotten a small sample size of him and just determined. And I don't, I don't want to go after a guy's character. I feel like it's strictly play on the ice. I don't think it's character issues. It's strange.
I certainly haven't heard anything. I feel like you would have at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh geez, who's the guy that just got let go by the Rangers? We talked about him like 3-4 weeks ago. Yeah. Thank you. Like his issues were well known before he even came into the league. He had issues when he was playing juniors. And then it continued. And it happened, you know, with all the teams he's been with. And then obviously New York issued him that warning, and then he immediately lost it after being benched and then, or scratched, I should say. And then, you know, they let go of him after the meltdown, with his teammate and whatnot. But I haven't heard anything, unless I'm like living under a rock or my memory is not serving me well. I haven't heard anything about his like off ice character or conduct. I mean, you look at it, the last really good season he had was with Arizona in 18-19. I'm looking at his stats right now, 72 games played. He had 41 points. And then after that, dished him off to Pittsburgh. And that's where, like, the on-ice production really – he's been a minus player his entire career, on a side note. I also just noticed that, for instance, his last year in Montreal, he was minus 31, which is not great.
He floats. Obviously. He certainly floats a little bit.
Exactly. So my point, you know, long-winded, is obviously the production's gone down since that year in Arizona, and he's been a minus player. So his last year in Montreal, he was minus 31. The following year, he was minus 19 in Arizona. So it could be, you know, the plus minus, you know, maybe they want him to play a little bit more defense, be a little bit more defensive minded, at least a little bit. You know, he doesn't have to become a defensive, you know, forward or whatever. But I don't know. You know, I'm looking at that, the plus minus, and that's just god awful. And so long-winded, sorry. Yeah. I think it's his play 100%. I mean, just looking at the stats and everything, simple stats, it seems pretty evident. It's minus six with Ottawa in his 8 games, by the way, with one goal.
Yeah. Well, real quick. I mean, Toronto's doing just fine. I mean, they took care of business against Ottawa in the second game, but Ottawa actually had a hell of a comeback against Toronto. I mean, that was 5-1 Leafs in Toronto. Ottawa's, you know, not having the best of year, but those kids don't quit. The one thing about Ottawa, I have to say real quick about them, and that's why I'm starting to think like it might be an attitude thing, character a little bit. I don't want to speculate, but like that's a team that's bad. They're clearly not going to make the playoffs, and they come back from 5-1 against Toronto. Maybe, you know, it seems like they've got plenty of guys on the team with a strong work ethic, and I, you know, I don't want to accuse Galchenyuk of doing anything, but like if you're a veteran and you've been around the league for a bit, like, and you know, you have good habits, you want it to rub off on the, you know, the younger players on your team. So
for Ottawa, 100%.
It almost makes me think there could be something. It's like, I'm not, just because we haven't heard about it, all I'm saying is I wouldn't.
Oh yeah. On. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I didn't mean that because we haven't heard anything. Oh, that doesn't mean anything. And I'm sure people listening know that. I didn't mean it that way.
Oh,
but
you didn't. Yeah, for sure. And so,
you know what I mean?
Speaking
though.
Of trade. Yeah, absolutely, buddy. We're hearing rumors, and I think this kind of came out right after we last recorded, so it's pretty well known for, you know, those listening to the show have already heard about it a little bit, but Bobby Marks reported the Pittsburgh Penguins tried to reacquire Marc-Andre Fleury during their GM search period. So obviously they brought in Hextall and Brian Burke in Vegas, giving Leonard the extension. You know, Fleury, the agent, Fleury's agent, Alan Walsh, between the dagger going through his back, being backstabbed. And, you know, that goaltending tandems, what's it cost him? $12-13 million a year. Like, you know, when you're paying guys like Petrangelo and Stone and Pacioretty and down the line, it's hard to stay cap compliant when you've got a goaltending tandem that's that expensive. So Pittsburgh seems like they're interested in bringing him back. Jari was an all-star last year, but, you know, Tristan hasn't been playing as well so far to start the year. So I don't know if they're trying to do a Jari-Fleury tandem, or maybe they could flip Jari elsewhere if they're already hitting the panic button on him. You know, it's always interesting, right, when you have new ownership.
Right.
Not new ownership, but like new management come in. You know, Burke and Hextall might have different opinions. I mean, it's a they're probably doing an audit. Like, they don't have any loyalty to any of these players. They're not the ones who brought them to Pittsburgh. So interesting. It'll be interesting to see if Pittsburgh continues their pursuit of Fleury, having, you know, the Burke and Hextall in place now. But apparently Bobby Mack also said that Fleury prefers to end his career in Pittsburgh. So I don't know if he's planning on going there once he's a free agent, or he's secretly hoping he gets dealt there now. But
sure.
I mean, what are your thoughts on that whole situation? Do you think
Pittsburgh would be smart to bring him back? Or? Obviously, you know, the fans of Pittsburgh would welcome him with open arms. You know, I don't know. Yeah, I guess, you know, I could obviously with, you know, kind of what we've been seeing with, you know, like you said, the changes and everything. But them saying we're in a win now mode with Crosby and Malkin and Letang and whatnot, I guess it kind of would make sense. I mean, like we said, the goaltending hasn't been quite where it's been expected. The whole, you know, Penguins in general, you know, maybe been underperforming a little bit for the last few years. Where are they at in the points? Yeah, they're fifth right now in the East. But I mean, it kind of would make sense. I mean, Fleury's been proven in the playoffs, you know, series after series, year after year, you know, with Vegas. So, I mean, it kind of would make sense, you know, just to bring back. And it's not like teams haven't done it before. You know, the Hawks have done it a bunch, bringing guys back to varying degrees of success. I don't know. I don't think it's a terrible move. You got to change something up, I feel like. You know, they're 7-6-1 right now with, you know, two of the best players in the world. So, I certainly think it's interesting. I feel like Fleury would wait, though. You know, like if I'm Fleury, I'm trying to win another cup, or at least that would be my guess as to what his thought process is. And Vegas is, well, I mean, Vegas is Vegas, dude. They hit the league, you know, they hit the ground running. So it's almost like, dude, just stay there, win another cup potentially, and then go to Pittsburgh. You know, I wouldn't be ready if I was Fleury to jump ship right now, just to go play with my former teammates and finish my career in Pittsburgh, unless he was like deciding internally that either the end of this year or next year is going to be it for him and he's going to retire. Other than that, I don't know why you would do it, because Vegas is just so fucking filthy, dude.
Right. Yeah. The thing, I mean, that's a hell of a tan. I mean, if you're already cap compliant, I mean, I feel like Vegas has to feel like they got to just be really desperate to get rid of his money. Cause
I mean, yeah, exactly.
That's the only thing I can think of. Yeah, and then the thing with Pittsburgh, too, is it sounds like they were interested in him during the window where they're looking for a GM, and I feel like that's – you shouldn't be making those types of decisions until you have your new front office in place.
Agreed, yeah.
You got to make sure that the new front office is aligned and everything. So it'll be interesting to see if the Hextall-Burke duo continues to pursue Fleury, or if maybe they backed off those pursuits. So something to monitor, something to keep an eye on. But yeah, I don't know if you want to start with the lighter subject or the heavier one. Just Arizona. Maybe we'll just start with Arizona. Get it out of the way.
Might as well get the bad news out of the way first.
Yeah, it's weird. So they're actually on the ice this year. They're fourth in points percentage right now in the Honda West division. Shout out NHL for having their division names get sponsored because of the lost revenue from last year. So they're fourth in points percentage. I mean, they've got 16 points through 15 games, or 7-6-2. You know, they had a new GM come in. They had a little bit of a blunder with the draft pick, right, where they basically had to terminate the kid's contract, you know, with the off-ice issues there that we don't need to get into. You know, Chyka leaving them basically in the middle of the night high and dry. You know, them having the workout, the combine issues that made them forfeit draft picks. So this is a team that's literally had draft picks taken away from them forcefully, and then – maybe not done as thorough of research on one draft pick. And then they have a new owner there. And there was an article in The Athletic, and personally, I don't subscribe to it, so I'm not going to pretend I read through all the details, but there's some alarming things that I've heard some cliff notes about, where it's basically the Coyotes organization's been a toxic workplace. There's been some shady financial doings. There's some pending lawsuits, you know, possibly some sexual harassment. So this is just reporting. These are not ironclad facts as far as I know, but you know, Arizona, the last, I mean, pretty much as long as I've been a fan, I'm 26 years old, and pretty much as long as I can remember, they hit a high note, like in 2011, 2012, you know, going to the conference final against the Kings. And obviously the Kings were buzzsaw, juggernaut, you know, eventual cup champs that year. But other than, you know, a random year here or there, the Yotes, I mean, you have attendance issues. The NHL was running them at one point. You know, they've never really been big spenders. Now you have all these off-ice issues. Like, Dano, I'm not asking you to, but have you tried making sense of what the fuck's going on out there? It's the strangest thing.
I have no idea. I've been listening with one ear and reading with another on Yahoo Canada. And basically the Yotes, they like vehemently deny what's going on in the Athletic. And I too don't subscribe to the Athletic. So again, just like you said, we're not going to sit here and act like we read the whole thing. However, what's the owner's name again? How do you say his last name? Is it Murillo?
Yeah.
Or Murillo? Murillo? I'm sorry if someone's screaming at me trying to pronounce it correctly. I'm just going to read a quote real quick.
I think it's Alex Morello.
Morello? Okay, we'll go with Morello just for consistency's sake. We are very disappointed that the Athletic for several months have condoned a harassment campaign against Alex Morello, the Arizona Coyotes, the Morello Group, and dozens of current employees and former employees. And then they say, we question the potential reliance by the Athletic on disgruntled ex-employees who have proven to be untrustworthy and lacking in candor or confidential non-public information, and on vendors with whom the club secured negotiated settlements to undo years of financial management under prior ownership and club leadership. The quote goes on and on and on. They essentially also defend Murillo, talking about his success as a leader in the community. And then they say he's got a 40-year track record of success, you know, with businesses and such. And then they're exploring legal options with the Athletic. I just wanted to read that piece. I have no idea what's going on. I hate to speculate until, you know, all the facts kind of come out, but it seems like everything's all over the place. You know, like you said, sexual assault or, you know, sexual allegations. You've got the on-ice stuff or the front office stuff with, you know, them cheating at the draft, at the combine and whatnot, and all that, and losing draft picks and Chyka, like you said. So it's just everything all at once, and it's all over the place, and it's so hard to make sense of what the fuck is going on and who's telling
the
truth.
Props to the guys on the ice, though, in all sincerity.
Well, right. You don't even think about it. They're in the playoffs right now. Yeah. Yeah. And they've been playing really well. I don't really think about their off ice struggles that much. It just doesn't, you know, I try to focus, you know, on ice stuff anyway. That's more where my brain is centered when it comes to the NHL than front office stuff. You know, you're definitely more, I'd say, knowledgeable or whatever you want to call it with stuff like that. But, you know, you can't help but notice this stuff. But the way they've been playing, it's like nothing's wrong almost. And like you said, you got to give them props. It's amazing.
Yeah, give them props for, you know, shaking off the distractions all around them and just competing on the ice. And I'm not trying to take credit away from them. I think I've been very clear on this. You've got three very good teams, I'd say, in that division, which is Vegas, Colorado, and St. Louis, who I believe are, that's what the order is right now. In points percentage, at least, I think St. Louis got a couple more points than Rado, but no, the Avs got some games in hand. But you have the three California teams that absolutely stink.
Aye, aye, aye.
And then
and the poor Wild.
And then you got the Wild. I mean, I think basically the top three there is set. You know, obviously the order isn't, but then Minnesota's been kind of shut down for a bit, right? So
with the
COVID issues, the exposure there. So
it's tough, but they'll be rested. So, you know, you never know. I mean, they've only got three crappy California teams, like you said, to get over. Yeah, I think, you know, once – provided that they're able to stay healthy and COVID free, I think the Wild could potentially, you know, I'm not saying that they are a playoff team, but I could see them, you know, going for a run and at least challenging. I think that's within their realm of possibility.
Somebody's got to earn the right to losing five games to Vegas or Colorado in the first round. So who will it be? But I'm just kidding. Nothing's for sure, you know, after we saw what Columbus did to Tampa a couple of years ago. But
yep.
But I think that's where I'd lean at this point. To a more lighthearted subject, I guess. And it's amazing the guy's still playing professionally. I guess if you've watched the guy's workout videos and you've just been aware of this guy's being, he's just got this, he's almost like, I don't know how to describe it, Jager, man. It's like, I don't want to say there's an aura around him. It's
oh, that's definitely, yes. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah, it's,
he's bizarre.
He's awesome.
He is the man. I mean, he's still getting after it at 49. So we've talked about funny off ice stuff, and I know we just talked about Arizona and some of the particular issues they're having. So we're not, it's Jager, right? So I feel like this is definitely like in good fun and good humor, or we wouldn't even talk about it on the show. But this man is damn near at the 50 year mark, and he goes on his Instagram and he writes this, takes a picture with this girl, and it's like this gallery on his Instagram. The first, you know, the first slide is him with this girl, and it's all in Czech, but like if you hit the C translate button, it translates in English. And I think it was a birthday. I think he was talking about his birthday, and he goes,
yeah,
thank you for your wishes, thank you for the small parties, and thank you for the surprise. She was not a stripper as everyone expected, but she was a quantum physics professor, Jan Rock. And instead of the beauty of women's breasts, we talked about the beauty of the universe, and then some smiley emojis. So the legend of Jager just continues. God only knows.
Absolute madman.
I really don't know what he was getting at here, if he just really enjoyed talking to this girl or what, but we're recording on a Wednesday night, and Twitter was abuzz about Yogs.
I mean,
coming from the clouds with this tweet.
Like, yeah.
People were trying to make sense of it. It's just classic Jager.
It could be like Tom Brady's avocado tequila tweet when he won the Super Bowl, you know, and he just was super hammered and was like, screw it, I'm going to post what I'm going to post, and I don't really care. And he's proved that before, that he doesn't care. There's the whole, you know, model or whatever that tried to, blackmail him. He was like, I don't give a shit. Here you go. Here's your money. I mean, the guy just doesn't care, and I love it. Also, on a side note, I can't believe he's still playing. He's going to be like 80 by the time he retires, dude.
Yeah.
It's absurd, but it makes sense. And actually, I probably would say Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau are somewhat similar. Their work ethic off the ice is what keeps them in these leagues. So obviously right now Jager's overseas and Marleau and Thornton are in the NHL, and they're not as old as Jager, obviously, but they're getting up there and they're still able to play with all these young kids. And it's Jager's work ethic is bananas. It's, I think, widely known as a fact that he would come to the rink early, get there, do all this stuff, pregame, play the game, bust his balls, and then he would be the last one, and he would still sit and he would work out for like 2 more hours after the game, like just by himself. So, you know, his work ethic and whatnot, obviously his on ice stuff speaks for itself. It's just hilarious. The off ice stuff is just on a whole nother world. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And he's still one of my favorites. I was, first time I put on a jersey, they were like, pick your number. And I was like, 68, I'm going to be Jaromir Jagr. I was like, I don't know, 5 or something.
That's awesome. I mean, obviously the mullet's iconic. I think he's actually, I believe he's the owner or part owner of the Kladno team that he's playing with in the Czech league. So that's his hometown. I think he's got at least some equity right in the organization there, but
that would make sense. Yeah.
Just absolutely wild. I mean, you go on his Hockey DB and we all know he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but just some absurd point totals in this guy's career. I mean, he had a stretch from the 96 season through the 01 season where his point totals were 149, 95, 102, 127, 96, and 121. And I know, obviously, the goaltenders were wearing less equipment and, you know, things like that, but crazy. And then he came back to the NHL after the lockout. You know, he came back to the league after the lockout, and he had 123 points his first year back with the Rangers.
Welcome back.
Yeah, 123, and then he had 96 with the Rangers the next, year. Crazy.
You could make all the excuses you want about goaltending. I mean, he still had where is it at? He still had 66 points in 15-16 in 79 games, almost a point a game player, and he'd been in the league for 20 years at that point.
I thought it was just absurd.
That's bananas.
I mean, he had 67 points when you're in Jersey and then 66 in Florida. And I mean, he was what, 40?
Yeah.
When he's with the Panthers, 43, yeah. 44. I mean, Jesus, like the, listen, I'm sure a lot of that, I'd have to look back. I'm sure a lot of that was, you know, on special teams, right? He probably was getting some PP time.
Don't matter. As long as that puck crosses the line, who gives a shit?
Oh, my God. No doubt about it. But, yeah, scoring 27 goals in the National League at 44 or 40 is just patently absurd. Awesome. I mean, the guy's legitimately one of a kind. And I know Gordie Howe played forever. And I think, you know, obviously Gordie Howe is an icon. But, you know, this is some of the stuff this guy did in his career is absurd. And it's still going somehow. But that's enough Jager talk.
It really is.
I guess what we can do is just jump into the Hawks. If you don't mind, I'll set the stage real quick for it.
Sure, go for it.
We can get into it. So, since we last spoke, they played four games. They racked up 6 points. They should have had more. They let that first Columbus game slip away from them. They jumped up in that game. I believe it was 4-2. Then they jumped up 5-4. They end up giving up a couple goals late. First game where the young kids on D and well, the first game in a while, obviously earlier in the year, they didn't start so hot, but, the young D and, Lankinen looked a little vulnerable in that first game. And then finding a way in that second game, Bodan scores again, so Bodan and Mitchell get their first career goals. The first Columbus game, Bodan scores the first goal for the Hawks, the game on Saturday evening. And then Kuryshev, a great back check play, puck finds Soderberg, he gets his first as a Hawk, and then DeBrincat hero in overtime again. And then hey, they go to Detroit, they play a bad Detroit team on Monday and Wednesday, they get the job done in OT again. I don't think they played particularly well in either game. I thought they had some better scoring chances certainly in the second game, but they didn't even score 5-on-5. And Kubalik with the OT winner. So these Hawks, they're like the cardiac Hawks. Every game they play is a one goal game. The goalie's pulled or they're going overtime. I mean, they're competing in every game. And, just looking at the standings right now, I try to look at points percentage because it's really jumbled. I mean, you have a team like Dallas who's played 12 games and a team like the Hawks who's played 18 and, Detroit's played 18. There's a lot of games in hand. There's a lot of stuff that needs to shake out. So the best way I've been tracking the standings just across the league in all divisions, just with some pauses from some teams, is I really look at points percentage. Of the Hawks right now are at 22 points through 18 games played. They're 9-5-4. They've got a 6-11 point percentage, which is good for fourth in the Discover Central division. So Florida's in first. If you look at it that way, Tampa in second, Carolina in third, Hawks in fourth, and Dallas, Columbus, Nashville, and Detroit in order. So I don't know where you want to start, Dano, if you want to start with the Columbus series or Detroit, but I think Bodan, Kuryshev, Suter, DeBrincat, Lankinen definitely standouts for me, but there's plenty of guys. I mean, it's a heart and soul team.
Yeah.
Heart and soul team that's winning ugly, but want to give you a chance to
give you 100%. I just want to bring up Kuryshev's goal real quick today. Because that's definitely, that's definitely goal of the year. Worthy, top 10, whatever you want to call it, splits the D. And I know it's against Detroit. I know everybody's, that was against Detroit. They're still an NHL team. Like, people act like, a high school hockey team would beat Detroit because they're so bad. Like, no, they're still NHLers. They still know how to play the game. Should never get split like that, though. That's embarrassing. And then he just slides it through 5-hole. How silky is that? But yeah, I mean, done by committee. They don't, like you said, you've noted some forwards, obviously. DeBrincat looks great. Kane, obviously, is his self. He just, I mean, another player I hope to see around for a long, long time.
Did you see that toe drag he put on Fabry in the last game? Oh, my. He didn't score.
Yeah, he just, I mean, it's tremendous just watching him play still. And you know, Lankinen's playing well. Subban's played decent. You know, he's had a couple huge saves for them. Power play's clicking. Power play has not clicked in a long, long time. I feel like Hawks fans know that all too well. The last few years, our power play has just stunk, special teams in general. But they look pretty solid right now. I mean, yeah, like you're saying, in terms of points, like obviously, like you said, it's hard. So they played the most games out of anyone in the division because they've had the least amount of problems COVID-wise. Oh, shit, I went back on my screen. The next closest is, where was it at? Columbus. But, you know, most of these teams have four games in hand. Dallas has six games in hand. So obviously, you know, Dallas and them are going to come back. I only hope that the Hawks continue it. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10, considering the start that they had with goaltending and all that stuff. I don't know if 7-2-1 ever would have crossed my mind, especially when they kept losing in overtime. And now they can't seem to, they all they do is win in overtime now. So, you know, I'm going to knock on some wood here real quick, but I definitely didn't expect, you know, a 10 to look like that, you know, last 10 games to look like that. So right now they look great. They work so hard. And I can't say enough. They've definitely, I think I can speak safely for the both of us when they're surprising both of us right now, I would say. And that's awesome. So
hell yeah. I mean, the recipe for success so far has been special teams. And honestly, the power play, you know, having been so anemic with all the talent they've had up front the last couple of years, that's obviously catching a lot of the attention. But the penalty kill has been outstanding. And your best PKer's got to be the goaltender. And Lankinen and Subban, Lankinen especially, I mean, shut out, you know, in the last game against Detroit. I would say he was okay the first Columbus game. But he's pretty much any time Lankinen's been in the net, he's given them a fighting chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that's all you can ask for.
Sorry, go ahead.
And the special teams has been great. They forecheck. They're more physical. I feel like they're quicker this year. It's going to be really interesting. This division's tough. I mean, the Hawks are showing that they are a true playoff contender. I know Columbus gets a lot of the hoopla for how hard they work, but I think the Hawks' work ethic is
right. Agreed, 100%.
And you even said like, yeah, they haven't had any games canceled due to COVID, but they've had some COVID issues. They've
100%.
You know, which is crazy. I mean, like, think about some of the guys.
DeBrincat was out.
Ullmark's been out. Boqvist, DeBrincat. Who else?
What did you say, Boqvist? I literally. Okay.
There was someone else that missed some time.
Bodan. Now that you say that, I think you think you might be right.
And he is so sick. I'll say this. I never thought I'd say this, but they picked those guys pretty close to one another as far as timeline. Boqvist and Bodan, and Bodan's ahead of Boqvist right now, development wise. Like it's.
Hawks have some really good young talent right now, which is awesome.
And Ian Mitchell. And the young kids are playing great. I was just going to say real quick. I mean, Suter's been playing professional for a couple of years. He's a rookie in the league, and Lankinen's 25, but Lankinen looks great. Suter's leading all rookies in goals. Kurashev's been awesome. Good hard worker. Hagel's been creating some havoc with his speed. He's been a little snake bit scoring. Certainly, like, he's still looking for that first goal, but he's certainly going to the right areas, and he's had some A-plus chances. I know the first Detroit game, just in the first period, he drew a penalty with speed. And then later in the period, he passed it to himself up the wall and fed it to Kubalik in front of the net. And it was finally nice to see Kubalik in overtime. I guess he hadn't had an even strength goal. And I guess technically when you're 3-on-3, it's even strength, but we're still waiting for a 5-on-5 goal from him.
It'll happen.
Man, if he starts clicking a little bit,
it'd be nice. What I was going to say is it's so nice, you know, seeing all these young kids come up and, you know, starting to play well, gel a little bit more, maybe hearing that buy into Colleton's system a little bit more. Cause I think for Hawks fans, you know, obviously with the championships and whatnot, you know, we got obviously really spoiled with that core. And then, you know, obviously kind of uncertainty hits when that core sort of is slowly but surely falling apart, right? Like Jose had to retire due to a skin illness, you know, Sharpie retires, various retirements. Siebes has been hurt for a while and kind of hasn't been himself even when he's on the ice.
Stan said this week they're concerned about Siebes.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me. But what I mean is, you know, this kind of era of uncertainty came in, and it's like, well, we have Kane and Taves, but we don't have anything else. You know, how are we going to get back there? And slowly but surely, you're starting to see, obviously, that we've got a long road before they get anywhere near where they were in 13, 14, and 15. But it's just good to see some life, you know? And so it's nice to see. And they're, oh man, I hope it keeps up. That's all you can pray for.
In this division, it's hard to,
I mean, this is a really tough division.
Completely insane. I actually, just looking at the standings, the last 10, Florida, Tampa, Carolina, and Chicago. Don't ask me how this happened, but Florida, Tampa, Carolina, and Chicago in their last 10 are each 7-2-1. So they've basically had to play this well just to keep pace with those top three teams.
Right.
So,
and now it's going to get harder because now they're going to have to play those teams. And obviously someone's going to have to lose their streak, which right. I think we both knew was coming, that it was going to be a little bit more. Obviously they got to play Tampa again. They haven't played Tampa since the home opener, the season opener. Obviously Florida's rolling really well, 10-2-2. And again, as I mentioned earlier, they're the only team that has 18 games that are in playoff positions right now. The other three literally are all four games behind them. So they've got games in hand. And they're, like you said, they're all 7-2-2. So games in hand and they're rolling just like the Hawks are. So this is about to get a little bit more difficult for them. I just want to bring up the Preds real quick. I know I brought them up last time. Well, it's also been rumored, I wanted to bring this up too, that their head coach is on the chopping block again. Nice. Which is really unfortunate.
I don't know why the
because
fuck they hired him to begin
with. Well, it was such a quick hire too. So it's twofold for me. One, Hines is literally right back where he was a year ago when he got fired. What was it, from Ottawa?
Jersey.
Thank you. Literally pretty much right back where he was as of a year ago. And then the Preds fire Laviolette and then almost instantaneously, like, impulse pick Hines as their head coach. And I really don't think it's all his fault. I mean, I understand coaches are supposed to change up lines when things aren't working and they're supposed to have, you know, various systems and bring in a culture, whatever that culture might be for them, you know, yada, yada, yada. But at some point you got to look at the damn players and they are just so freaking bad right now. And I mean, underachieving is probably an understatement for what they're doing. It's unbelievable. They have very average goaltending. Their forwards are nowhere to be found. A lot of them are tied up in big contracts too. So if they want to make a move, it's going to be a little bit more difficult than, you know, a team that's maybe been a little bit more frugal with their money. It's just a horrible situation.
Dude, they're so boring. Like the,
yeah, I
those
think
Hines Devils teams were not enjoyable to watch. And like no, Nashville, and it was almost like, all right, they fired Laviolette. They're like, Laviolette's a good coach, but it seems like he wears out his welcome after about 3 or 4 years. It seems like it's been kind of like a consistent thing for him.
Yeah.
Kind of wears out his welcome after a few years. But they went from a team that maybe just needed like a little bit of a shakeup. Like you look at Vegas, right? Like DeBoer comes in there. It's just more so like a kick in the ass.
Yeah.
Really weird to hire your rival coach,
yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
but it's still working.
There,
obviously
he basically came in there and sucked any life that they had left. I mean, they lost to Arizona in the bubble. Right. And if I recall correctly, they lost to Arizona in the bubble and they've gotten off to a putrid start this year. So,
right.
And then we might need to save it for next episode, but Jesus, like the patience of Jack Eichel has to be starting to wear thin in Buffalo.
Oh God, yeah.
It's talk about a team where it's not going well. I mean, that's a team that's gone through how many different coaches, and they bring in Taylor Hall, and
still,
I think we kind of knew that division did not set Buffalo up, but I would still say they're not playing as well as they should be. Even being in that division. So one more couple quick Hawks notes before we sign off. And then I actually have a note on Connor McDavid. We'll finish with McDavid. No, just to finish up with the Hawks talk. Back-to-back games in Carolina, Friday and Saturday. I would say it's probably a safe bet that you'll see both Subban and Lankinen. I mean, Lankinen's obviously going to get one of those games, but I think with it being a back-to-back, you got to think Malcolm's going to get the nod in one of those games. And then those are on the road, and then they finish the six-game road trip in Columbus. So get to see Columbus a week later again. So games on Tuesday the 23rd and the Thursday the 25th at Columbus. And Connor Murphy is dealing with a little bit of a hip issue. They said he's going to miss 10 to 14 days. So the Hawks have been without the Murph dog the last few games. So just a couple Hawks notes. I know we mentioned Boquist and Carpenter, you know, Walmart coming back from COVID, but actually dealing with, seems like really they're, well, actually shit. I think we forgot to mention Shawzy. We almost.
Oh yeah.
For him, I mean, he's had concussion issues, so hoping the best for Shawzy. He's given the Hawks a lot, and if you ask me, I hope he takes some time to think about, you know, him and his family, and he's given this organization everything. He doesn't owe him another shift. I say the same thing about Taves with whatever he's dealing with, but Shawzy is a consummate professional, hard worker, you know, for a shorter guy, you know, he always got his nose dirty, involved on a couple cup-winning teams, so you know, when it comes to concussions and head trauma, I think it's not Colleton, you know, was seemed pretty upset when he told the reporters and the press that he, that the Hawks had put him on injured reserve because Colleton, his career was cut short through concussion. So he definitely was empathizing, I believe is the term, with Shaw, just with his situation. So I feel absolutely gutted for Andrew. I know he was a long road back. You know, he got, I think it was around like Black Friday. I think it was like late November of the previous season. And, you know, he didn't play at all. He didn't come back with in the bubble and then the off season. And, you know, he was ready to go opening night for him to get another concussion. So early in the season, you know, you just got to hope the best for him. So I don't know if you have anything on Shaw real quick, but just, it's a shitty situation.
Buddy. I mean, you, yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen. Much.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with that one. Like you said, he's, you know, two cups to his name for us. And, you know, there's so much, you know, obviously this whole podcast revolves around hockey. As professional hockey players, you know, as NHLers, obviously their lives revolve 24/7 around hockey. But unless you're Jaromir Jagr, and even Jagr's still got plenty of years ahead of him where hockey won't be in the picture, you got to be thinking about, you know, long-term effects of concussions and how that affects you later in life, you know, obviously. And we've been over this conversation, you know, numerous times. You know, there's a wealth of knowledge out there now. CTE is a real thing. You can't even diagnose it until after the person's passed away. But you see it in behavioral things with people that have it. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying Shaw's got it now or will have it, but, you know, at some point, you just have to hang them up and say that, you know, my health and my life is worth more than another concussion that could potentially kill me, you know, sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And whatever he does, it's his life. It's his choice. I hope he just doesn't feel obligated to come back or doesn't feel rushed.
Exactly.
And I'm sure the Hawks have told him.
I'm sure he knows that, but.
Yeah. But yeah, it sucks on Shawzy and kind of, we'll end it, I guess, on a high note. I should have mentioned this earlier in the show. I know usually our theme is we cover the other 30 teams before we start yapping about our boys. But this just happened while we're recording. We're recording on Wednesday. I think we mentioned that a couple times now. The Edmonton-Winnipeg game's going on. And in the middle of the game Wednesday night between Winnipeg and Edmonton, Connor McDavid became the eighth fastest player to 500 points. And he tied Sidney Crosby in how many games it took to reach the 500-point pinnacle. It took Crosby and McDavid each 369 career games. So, I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about how sick 97 and 29 are in Edmonton. So no shocker to see him reach a milestone like that. But obviously, it's pretty cool. You know, especially the fact, like, he's had a couple injuries in the past. Obviously, he had that knee issue the last game of the regular season, the 1 year in Calgary, and he broke his collarbone. I think it was it his rookie year he broke his collarbone?
Yeah, he only played half the year for his rookie year.
Yeah, so, and I know it's not tracked as far as you know, days. It's tracked as far as games played, but really cool to see that. So I think we covered a lot, Dano. I think we'll call her an uppie. So everyone, thank you for listening. Dan, thanks for joining. Hope everyone's staying warm, staying safe, staying healthy, and appreciate everyone tuning in. And Dan, I will talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
I would anticipate we'll talk. There will have been at least 3 Hawks games played. I don't know if we'll end up recording after the first Columbus game or try to wait till the second, but
sure.
Either way.
And then one last thing to finish off on for me, just super briefly. We got back-to-back Battle of Albertas. So speaking of Connor McDavid, I'll definitely be glued to the TV screen on those because, geez Louise, those games are riots. So, but like you said, brother, we will see you next week. I'm excited to talk then. Hopefully we'll have some good Tkachuk stories to talk about. I'm sure one or two will probably happen, along with many other things with those series. And obviously we'll talk Hawks and all that stuff.
I mean, this is a compliment because I think it's the cliche thing. Like, Matthew Tkachuk is the type of player that you hate to play against, but you'd love to have on your team. I think
100%.
That's like the best kind of compliment you could give somebody, especially a hockey player. But Brady's a little shit too. Don't let him off the hook. He plays.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
He's a bitch too. And I mean that in the nicest way possible.
Oh, I know. Yeah. They really are.
All right, Dano. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk soon. All right.
All right, everyone. Have a good night.